On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is where we slow down developments, take them one at a time. Here's an outline. We'll look at legislation the governor signed last week, including a requirement for commercial truck drivers to be trained to spot human trafficking. And then there was that controversial bill making it a felony to trespass or damage pipelines. So what do you think of the governor signing this into law? Does it infringe on free speech? Are you a truck driver? Do you think educational training could help you spot human trafficking? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So Governor Evers signed this bill last week that will make it a felony to trespass or damage oil and gas pipelines in Wisconsin. There was a lot of debate around this. What happened there?
So this is a bill that had a lot of interest from a number of advocacy groups. Ultimately, it passed the legislature with a fair amount of support. It was a bipartisan bill. It had both Republican and Democratic sponsors. It passed out of an assembly committee unanimously, Senate committee with only one opposing vote. But there was some pretty profound, as I mentioned, just activism against this bill because of some ramifications, primarily with free speech and individuals who come to pipelines to protest.
And it was a build out of a 2015 piece of legislation. And they said they were going back to correct that 2015 legislation or add to it. What was going on there?
So one of the things about this bill that Democrats have pointed to in particular is the fact that it has exemptions for these penalties for trespassing on the private property of oil pipelines for people engaging in like union picketing or activism in that regard. It also has an exemption for, quote, exercising a right of free speech or assembly that is otherwise lawful. So it does have some of those extra tenets that Democrats say make it a little bit more conducive to allowing people to kind of voice their opinion and their opposition to these pipelines.
We heard from tribal nations specifically on this bill. Does it have the power to impact tribal communities trying to live on their lands?
That's what tribal communities are saying. So the Bad River Band of the Chippewa said that they've been hunting and gathering on land near an oil pipeline on their land for quite a while. And they said that, you know, them being there and continuing to engage in that activity would open them up to possible criminal prosecution, actually a felony charge under this new law. And they said that was really unfair and inappropriate.
Let's take a look at the CNAs. The governor vetoed a bill that would have required less training for certified nursing assistants. Currently, CNAs, they have to train for 120 hours, but the bill would have reduced that to 75, the federal minimum. What message is the governor saying here by not signing this legislation?
So he says, as some opponents said in the process of negotiating this bill, that reducing those training hours will hurt the quality of care. Interestingly, he said that the amount of training also has a correlation with job turnover, how long people stay in these roles. And he said having people trained to a certain degree will actually help address the nursing shortage because of that turnover. So it's an interesting dynamic because the governor says his veto actually perpetuates some of the things that the sponsors of the bill said that they were going to do. Just very different approaches.
We're talking with Laurel White. She is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter. Are you a nurse or a CNA? Should the governor have approved lowering the hours requirement to become a certified nursing assistant? Could this have helped the nursing shortage? Or do you think this was the right decision? Are you a truck driver? Do you think educational training could help you spot human trafficking, perhaps prevent it? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So the CNA's bill, this bill would have made it easier to become a nurse as Wisconsin faces a nursing shortage. What are the lawmakers who introduced the bill saying about this decision and it not going further?
So the two sponsors of this legislation released a statement after the governor released his veto, saying that with his veto, the governor is essentially disregarding people who need the care of nurses who are facing this shortage, who are seeing the ramifications of, you know, not having enough people in this profession right now. I think it's also interesting to note that some of these sponsors, or some of the proponents, rather, including the sponsors, have pointed out that a number of states that border Wisconsin have that 75-hour requirement, or a requirement that's less than the 120 hours that Wisconsin currently requires. So they said that, you know, bringing Wisconsin down to the federal minimum would bring us closer in line with some of our neighbors.
Let's look at human trafficking now. Last week, the governor signed a bill that would require training for commercial truck drivers to recognize human trafficking. Why did Governor Evers, target truck drivers here?
So he said that truck drivers are on the front line of this issue because they're, you know, they're on the ground, they're moving around the state. They're often situated in areas where trafficking has been known to take place, like truck stops, rest stops. This is actually a bill that's been circulating around the Capitol for a few years now. And so it's been a conversation that both Republican and Democratic lawmakers have been having about how to address human trafficking in Wisconsin and who are kind of the key figures to play a role in that.
Do we know yet what this training would look like?
So basically what this training would do is it would require commercial truck driver education programs to just roll human trafficking education into their curriculum. So the curriculum would have to have information about how to identify human trafficking, you know, what are kind of the warning signs as you're out and about, how you might sort of be able to see the indicators and how you would go about reporting that.
Well, let's take a call now. Crystal is joining us from Toma, commenting on the CNA legislation. Go ahead, Crystal.
Hi, thank you. My only comment is I've been in medical care for quite a long time, and nursing assistants, CNAs, are basically underpaid, underappreciated, and overworked. And until you fix that, there's no change in training hours. There's no dealing with the patients and turnover. You have to, they're the backbone of our medical care. We as nurses depend on them. They interact with the patients or the residents much more often than we do as nurses, and they do not get paid for the credit or the patient for it. So, you know, debating about hours of training is really going to be a moot point as we start taking.
Yeah, Crystal, thank you so much. And you're breaking up there, but you said notably that CNAs are the backbone in healthcare, that they're underpaid, and that, you know, we need to address this in a different way. Laurel?
That's something that's definitely been a conversation at the Capitol as well, is increasing pay for CNAs. That wasn't something that was an element of this proposal, though. So I think that as that conversation sort of continues to evolve about how to address worker shortages in various fields in Wisconsin, you know, it's all about that allocation of resources and where lawmakers decide they want to put wage increases and where they can't.
We are in the mix of the State Capitol Report with WPR's Laurel White as our guide. What do you think about how the state handles open records requests? Does the governor need to be more open and transparent? Do you feel there is open government in Wisconsin? Or do you think there are transparency blunders? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment, more State Cap with WPR's Laurel White right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're breaking down developments one at a time, including a new lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's voter ID law. A national organization brought a suit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission last week. It says that student voter ID requirements are difficult and ultimately preventing students from voting. Are you a student or someone who voted in an election as a student? Do you have difficulty trying to vote? What are your thoughts on student voter ID requirements? Should they change? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, what does our current state law say about student voter IDs?
So under current law, student voters have to present an ID that has three components. It has to have the issuance date, it has to have an expiration date, no more than 2 years from that issuance date, and it has to have the signature. Now, interestingly, in addition to having that ID, students also have to produce some proof of enrollment at the polls. So they have to have something like a transcript or a tuition bill or something like that to show that they are currently enrolled in school as well.
And they have to bring this with them to the polls in order to vote.
That's right. Now, that can be an electronic document, so students can show that on their phone if they would like, which doesn't apply to everything that you can show at the polls, obviously. But they do have to have that additional documentation, or the ID having those three things doesn't matter at all.
So you spoke with a lawyer with the Andrew Goodman Foundation who filed the lawsuit, and here is Yael Bromberg talking about voting rights and why they shouldn't be a partisan issue.
The value that young people play in our democracy is an issue that's beyond partisanship.
So what is the Andrew Goodman Foundation arguing here?
So the foundation is essentially arguing that these requirements that we just outlined are too burdensome for students, and they're essentially making it too difficult for them to vote, and that is a violation of the U.S. Constitution's 26th Amendment, which protects against age-based voting discrimination.
So have you seen this foundation bring this type of lawsuit in other states?
Yes. So this is actually part of a coordinated effort across the country where this foundation is bringing this kind of lawsuit against Republican-backed voter ID laws that they say are too restrictive and limit some people from exercising their constitutional right.
What are supporters and opponents saying about the current status of student voter ID law?
So this is really a debate that's been playing out in Wisconsin for, you know, almost a decade now. Wisconsin's voter ID law was passed in 2011, and we've had a whole slew of lawsuits, and kind of the continual argument from opponents of the voter ID law is this argument here that, you know, that there are barriers being put up to certain populations, particularly populations like young people or minorities, and that it's keeping them away from the polls wrongfully. And they say, you know, voter fraud issues are not nearly prevalent enough to warrant this sort of change in state law. Now, supporters of voter ID say that voter fraud does happen and that there needs to be kind of this line of prevention that's put in place to keep voter fraud from occurring in Wisconsin.
And this case is currently on hold by a federal judge waiting another voter ID case brought in Wisconsin. So what is the impact here in the courts, and what is the timeline like?
So this is a really interesting scenario where we have, as we sometimes do in Wisconsin, kind of interacting lawsuits and overlapping lawsuits. So there are currently three voter ID lawsuits that are all awaiting a judgment by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. Now, this lawsuit filing isn't technically on hold yet because it was just filed. There is some speculation that it will be looped under one of those other cases because of some similarities that a judge might see it having. There was a similar lawsuit that was filed about student IDs earlier this year and about sort of the barriers that the student ID legislation law puts up. And it was filed under one of the bigger lawsuits that's already at the Seventh Circuit Court. So that could be a path forward for this one.
We're talking with Laurel White. She is WPR State Capitol reporter, and she joins us for a roundup of developments at the Capitol. You can join in. What do you think about how the state handles open records requests? Does the governor need to be more open? Join in at 800-642-1234. We saw Representative John Nygren, who chairs Joint Finance, file a lawsuit against Governor Evers last week. He wants the governor's administration to stop hiding public records. He says, what public records requests have been made recently to explain why Representative Nygren filed the suit?
So some folks might remember the kind of conflict between the legislature and the Evers administration over the Farmer Suicide Prevention Program and the funding for that program earlier this year. That, of course, led to the eventual dismissal of the Agriculture Secretary Brad Paff. Essentially, what Nygren is looking for here is 1 month's worth of emails and information from the governor's office about that suicide prevention program. He says that the governor's office and the administration had more information about the program than they were sharing with lawmakers, particularly the chair of a suicide task force in the assembly. They say that the administration had money that it was choosing not to tap for the program and doing that kind of for political reasons to say Republicans aren't funding this program. So Nygren requested this information from the governor's office. The governor's office declined to share it with him. So now he's going this legal route and asking a Dane County judge to compel the governor to release the information.
What has the governor's track record been while in office for open government, for Sunshine?
He's had a number of challenges from particularly conservative groups. You've seen this challenge. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has been involved with some challenges to the governor's open records laws. So it's a kind of a consistent, I think it's safe to say that there's kind of a drumbeat from some conservative individuals and organizations that the governor is not doing enough for transparency in Wisconsin.
Governor Evers recently signed a bill ensuring accommodations will be made for people with developmental or physical disabilities at polling sites. Let's bring in Barbara now in Milwaukee on disability rights. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. I'm happy to talk with you a little bit about AB 168, which Governor Evers signed into law in River Falls on Friday. During the November 2018 election, DRW, Disability Rights Wisconsin, received contacts from deaf voters and other voters with disabilities regarding the barriers to voting that they experienced due to current Wisconsin law, which required them to speak their name and address. Legislators took action and unanimously approved this bill, which will provide an accommodation and allow voters to have an election official or other individual selected by the voter state the name and address for them.
Barbara, thank you for bringing this to the table. Laurel, what does this mean at polling sites? What is the impact here?
Well, you know, as Barbara kind of outlined there, it's going to make it more accessible for certain individuals who have these limitations. And that's something that the governor has said is very important to him to make sure that all individuals have the accommodations that they need to, engage in their civic duty.
Barbara, thanks so much for calling. Let's look at the Supreme Court debate here for a moment. Last week, the first debate was held for the Supreme Court justice race. Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly is being challenged by Jill Karofsky, a Dane County judge, and Marquette Law Professor Ed Filone. Things got heated last week in this debate. What are you sensing there with these candidates?
Well, I think, this debate was a real preview of how intense this race is going to get. It was pretty quick that Karofsky and Filone, who are the liberal-backed candidates in this race, were criticizing Daniel Kelly for a number of things. I think kind of the first thing that Karofsky really went after Kelly for was her perception of him being partisan on the bench, kind of ruling in favor of conservative causes consistently. And she said that she was surprised. How can the law always be on the side of these conservative groups is what Karofsky said. So the role of partisanship and party ties in state Supreme Court races has been something that's getting more and more common over the past several years. You know, this is technically a nonpartisan race, but we're seeing increasing spending from party groups and kind of a conversation about judges' bias and their personal beliefs.
Yeah, what was Justice Daniel Kelly's response on that?
He said that that actually Karofsky kind of pointing out the conservative interests in some of these cases, she was making it partisan. And so he said she was actually kind of bringing a political lens to it, that he doesn't think of it that way, that he completely divorces any political personal beliefs that he has from the work that he does on the bench. And that's something that we heard an awful lot from the previous successful Supreme Court candidate, now Justice Brian Hagedorn. So that was a successful message for him, and we're definitely hearing Kelly echo that.
Laurel, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Senator Janet Buley. We're discussing campground regulation, other bills she's recently authored. What questions do you have for the state senator? You have a line, 800-642-1234. State Cap continues with Senator Janet Buley right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.